Hey everybody, welcome to Ground Zero Growth. I'm your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbot. I'm joined today with my guest, Ray Freeman of One Community Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. How are you doing today, Ray?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Great now. I'm
Excellent.
excited for this one. This will be great. One of the first questions I kind of like to dive into is well, first, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me about you, Ray, your family, One Community. What are you guys doing? Who are you after?
Man, that might take the whole hour, bro. That question alone. Name's Ray Freeman. I am the founder and executive director of One Community Jiu-Jitsu Club, where we offer easily accessible jiu-jitsu lessons. Our goal is to implement Brazilian jiu-jitsu into the public school system. I'm born and raised in Kansas City, Kansas. I am the oldest of my siblings. And, I actually grew up my entire life mostly in KCK. But, when I was 12, my mother lost her parental rights, which sent me into foster care, which is a part of, why I do what I do today with One Community Jiu-Jitsu Club. So, yeah, man, you ask away, brother. I am an open book.
So let's dive right into that in the foster care element. So I once upon a time I did tech support for a nonprofit organization that serviced it was almost before you called child services. Somewhere, somehow they said, "Hey, we're going to bring in this nonprofit and they're going to try and coach you guys on how to make this work." Prior to. And so I got to see kind of a little bit of that, but you got to see way more. So can you kind of tell us about, for those that aren't familiar with the system, can you kind of tell us how that's operating in your mind from having grown up in it?
From my perspective, I was 12 years old, and honestly, I thought that I was in trouble. But it was not the case. The situation was, my sisters, they were going to an elementary school at the time, and they had gone to school this particular day. They had wounds on their body from some physical abuse that we had experienced from my mother the day before. And that was what tipped off, the Child Protection Services, which then tipped off the police, who then came and picked me up. I'm a sixth grader riding my bike. And they're like, "Hey, are you so and so?" I'm like, "Yes." And from then on out, I had never gone back home, as it was. So it was definitely a eye-opening experience, very confusing experience for a 12-year-old at that time, because I want you to put yourself in 12-year-old Sam brain, or whoever the viewer is here. When you're 12, you're aware of what's going on around you, right? Like you're a preteen. Like I had hobbies, I had friends. Like I was very active and thinking I was figuring out what the world was until the rug got pulled up from under me, and then I was living with a completely different family. And then I moved eight different times throughout my teenage years. So very interesting time in my life for sure.
And you moved eight different times, all within kind of the Kansas City, Kansas area.
Yeah, for the most part, they were mostly in KCK. I did spend a l little bit of time in Texas, where my uncle, rest in peace, Uncle Dwayne, he actually was trying to adopt me and my sisters during that time. But as fate would have it, we ended up getting removed from that situation and coming back to Kansas City. And yeah, I actually moved in three or other times after that. So quite the whirlwind, brother.
Kind of tell me about that emotionally. Like, so I'm gonna have a hard time holding it together, by the way. You'll
Yeah,
have to bear with me. This is because
absolutely.
I'm an empathetic person, but so, and I
Absolutely.
didn't go through it, so I'm not trying to steal anything.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to
Yeah.
did you find yourself kind of accepting apathy? Just it is what it is. this is life, or I mean, you're in your younger years. That's a hard thing to come to, even at that point. You know, I remember in my younger years, it was just difficult not getting invited to some random birthday party, let alone moving multiple times in multiple different environments of people raising you likely differently. You know, when you say move different times, what I'm assuming is assumed is
Different
those are
placements.
8 different
Yes.
people parenting you.
Correct. You would assume correct. I was placed in 8 different homes throughout my entire foster care tenure. So, in 6 years, I lived with 8 different guardians. And yeah, that was tricky, man. That was very, very tricky, to maintain friendships. Like, I mean, I have no friendships from. When I was before in foster care, and even smaller friendships from during my foster care years, because, I was only at a home for maybe a year, and then I'd move the following year. So it was very difficult to establish those relationships, establish any hobbies, and, have a life, right? Like that's kind of what we do as people. We rely on, people knowing us and knowing our background to hopefully get us the opportunities that we're looking for in our future, right? Whether that be parents, an uncle, a neighbor that has known you for 10 years and wants to support your college future or your business endeavors. That was never an opportunity for me.
So to that end, what does that look like transitioning out of that environment? I mean, how early did you transfer out of that environment, and what the heck did that look like?
So actually, I aged out of foster care. So, when I turned 18, I was sat down by the guardian that I had at the time, and they were basically like, that summer I had to be out. So I ended up finding a friend from the school that I was a senior and graduated from in Junction City, Kansas. And I didn't know how to take care of myself. So it was very difficult for me to be a good roommate. In fact, I was a very bad roommate. I didn't know how to pay my bills. I didn't know how to hold a job. I did not know, I didn't have a driver's license or a car. So, I didn't hold up my end of the bargain, and that relationship ended up failing because of that situation. Very, very difficult trying to, navigate adulthood without the parental guardians or, whoever, you leaned into when you were 18, 19 years old.
That's a lot. So I'm thinking through kind of, because that there's a lot there. Like the first big question that comes to mind is, do you have any estimate or guess as to the quantity of people that do age out of that? Like, I
Oh.
wonder.
So I would not be the best person to ask that, but I did look online once and saw that there are about 500,000 foster kids in the system at, any given time. So I could imagine, I'd say over half, but that would just be me.
So we, for those of us that aren't horribly familiar with the adoption system, I think a lot of it for us is kind of what we see in the movies from the perspective of, it's adoption day and oh, we're excited and we're interviewed by different parents and we're hoping that that's going to happen. And then that doesn't happen. And that's that. Is it anything remotely close to that? How did it feel when your guide, I think you called them, or your coach, or your was like, hey, it's you've aged out. It's
Yeah.
time to.
So, during the, I never, yeah, I mean, I've watched movies growing up. I'd seen, the traditional orphan, right? The family comes in, they're rich, they're looking for that kid, and then they become that kid. No, that was never a situation that I had. In fact, I think that it's laughable that they that they paint movies like that. But at the same time, I did stay in a group home where there was a lot of other young boys living in the same building, and it was, overseen by like a social worker or a team of social workers. And that was kind of like our guardians at the time. Very, very, very confusing time. So that was, I was 13-ish at the time, very new into my foster care years at that home. Yeah, very confusing.
So what I'm hearing is that Annie might have it right from the group home perspective, per se, but not from the
Yeah,
it's
not.
adoption day, we're going to get interviewed by 20 different parents or whatever.
Yeah, that definitely, I mean, it might happen, but it definitely didn't happen to me, or nor did I meet anyone that it happened to, any other foster kids that it happened to.
So why did you think, why at a why did adoption not happen? Is it something where not enough parents are adopting, or it's a particularly difficult system to adopt from? Seems like I'm hearing all sorts of different stuff from different
Yeah.
angles on that.
Yeah, I think you'll probably get a bunch of different answers there, but I can only speak from my particular situation. So I was an older kid. I was, 12, 13, and into my teenage years throughout my entire foster care tenure. And then I, we came as a group. It was me and three other sisters that, I had in my family. So it was often very difficult for us, for them to split us up, until it wasn't. Eventually, they decided that it would be best as for the families to split us up. So when I was, what, in the ninth grade, that's when, me and my sisters ended up getting moved to different homes in different portions of the state.
Did that feel like you were losing a piece of your past in a former chapter?
Yeah, no, that felt, it's kind of hard to explain. It really is, because, I'm the oldest, and I always felt like I was supposed to be the protector in the family. Honestly, I learned that pretty early on, just even living with my mother. My mother, she would often be out super late at night, sometimes until the next morning. And that would be, me and my sisters at home. So I was, again, the oldest. I had to kind of make sure everyone stayed in line. And so I remember, when we were in foster care, I maintained that identity. Like, I maintained the identity that I'm the protector of these sisters, up until, we got removed. They actually, so one sister got moved to Parsons, Kansas. The other got moved to Independence, Kansas. And I stayed in Kansas City, Kansas.
So, have you reconnected with them since, or did you ever really fully lose touch?
Well, that's an interesting portion of the conversation. And because, yeah, we're still in touch, but if I can, speak blankly, like, our relationships were never the same after that. It's kind of hard to explain, but, like, obviously we know we're still blood, but the connection isn't there. And then our lives just took completely different directions, right? Like, so, yeah, that's probably the best way that I can say it.
So how did you progress? So you're out in the world now, and you're learning to pay bills and taxes and drive a car. Sounds like we got to get a permit and all that stuff. Tell me about kind of that progression. How rapid was that? When was your first job in the workforce? When did you feel like things maybe started to stabilize in a way that's like, I've got a job, I'm making income, I'm paying taxes, I'm driving a car.
Man, that took years, honestly, like years. So there was a point in my life where, after I lived in that apartment, and didn't have that job, I ended up, starting to go to K-State, but I wasn't really like there. I was just spending the night at the dorms with my friends and kind of partying and whatnot. And so that group of friends, shout out to Adrell, shout out to Dirks, that group of friends kind of helped me, walk the right path, so to speak. They are the ones that convinced me to, enroll for the FAFSA. They're the ones that convinced me to enroll at Kansas State University. And they're the ones that kind of set me down that path to responsibility, so to speak. From there, I needed to have some expendable income. I got a job at Taco Bell right there on Kansas State in the Union. And that was the job that I held for a year. So that was my first real job, right? Like, I held that full-time job for a year, and then, of course, moved on to different jobs. I worked at Sprint next, and then I had other sales jobs. Now I'm running a jujitsu charity. Like, how do we get here?
So was Sprint the last full-time one for you before you made the leap?
No, actually, I had multiple. I jumped. So yeah, I jumped a lot. I jumped around a lot because, I realized after Sprint, which was probably the longest full-time job that I've had ever, I realized that these companies weren't really going to respect my opinion as it is unless I go and get other experiences outside. And so that's what I did. I started literally getting, and I learned that when Comcast, they recruited me from Sprint. And I was like, I never wanted to leave Sprint. I really didn't. But Comcast made an offer that I couldn't refuse. So, and that's where I learned, the art of switching jobs to kind of better your personal expense.
It's interesting. There's something to that, I think, in some cases. Definitely depending on the industry you're in. In
Oh, 100.
tech, I jumped around a decent bit. Actually, I still remember a conversation where one of my longest standing jobs was just about 3 years, and I was actually at a customer site, and they go, "Oh, wow, that's a bit of an anomaly, isn't it?" And it did. It wasn't until like I let it really sink in. It was like, "Yeah, it is, especially for me." Like, but okay, so kind of tell me about, so then what have you, so you're recruited into Comcast out of Sprint. What had you kind of like, this is where you're in the workforce. It really sounds like, I mean, in and of itself, in my mind, you've already done what I like to call living multiple lifetimes, right? Like out of foster care into stability now, where you're holding down a job and you're at a position where you're like, hey, I have a respectable portfolio, whether you'll see it or not, somebody else will. So you're looking around at different jobs, and that's just a much different mindset than rewinding back to, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, in that. So kind of help me out with what has you kind of flip around mentally again and decide, I need to start a nonprofit centered around jujitsu.
I was actually training jujitsu, right? So I started jujitsu in 2015, no, 2016, I'm sorry, 2016. No, I'm my apologies, my years are off. I started
You're good,
jujitsu in
man.
2015, and jujitsu was one of those things like I never thought that I was gonna do. In fact, I had a roommate at my years at K-State that was an MMA fighter that was always trying to get me to come to jiu-jitsu, and I was always like, hell no, dude, I'm not doing that. I was a fan of MMA during these years, though, like the rise of Anderson Silva and Ronda Rousey, like that was, the world that I was entertained with. So I was like, if I'm gonna try to lose some weight, oh, another part of the equation, my wife, right? She's feeding me these delicious meals, fantastic meals. I was gaining a tremendous amount of weight. And I was like, I need to do something to lose some weight. So I walked into a jiu-jitsu gym one time because I see these MMA fighters, they're in top condition. And I get choked out by this soccer mom that's getting a private lesson. And I'm like, that, how did this happen? She hit a rear naked choke on me super quick. And I was instantly humbled. Instantly humbled. Jiu-jitsu, after 6 months of training jiu-jitsu, I realized it was doing more for me mentally than what I came in there looking for, which was the physical aspect. Like, I just kind of wanted to get into some shape. But I realized it was doing a lot for me mentally. And the way it was doing that was it was surrounding me with this shell of really cool, unique individuals, right? And these individuals come from different backgrounds. These are professional fighters. These are business owners, entrepreneurs. These are like doctors. Some of these guys are, celebrities or local celebrities even. And here I am, little old me from Wyandotte County, that has a poverty level of 18%, individual income levels, $30,000 a year. Here I am getting to intermingle and learn from these guys and have candid conversations. And really the thing that brought it all home, Sam, was my wife. She got pregnant in 2016 and or 2015, so roughly after I started. And I didn't have anyone to help move, right? Like, I didn't have a family to lean into. I don't, foster care didn't give me that support system. So I leaned into my guys at the jiu-jitsu gym. And here my wife is wobbling out of this apartment. And I got three guys helping me move this couch. And I'm like, oh, this is my family. This is my family. They're my family. And I hadn't had that, Sam. I never had that in my life. So fast forward a little bit, my gym, American Top Team, they shut down due to, just whatever reason. And I realized at that point that Wyandotte County did not have any Brazilian jiu-jitsu facilities. Although there was about two dozen in the KC Metro at the time. I was like, why is that? And then I started to think about the why, right? It's pointing to the low incomes and the people that, are traditionally unhealthy and just don't have that activity there to try. It's like, well, why not? Why not go the nonprofit route and try to instill this culture into this community that, affected me so much?
Yeah, that's a lot.
I know, brother.
Where did you meet your wife and all this, by the way?
K-State. I met wife when I met Kat when I was I met Kat when I was 21 years old. So yep, K-State, and honestly, it's a situation that kind of just fell into my lap, right? She came to me at the time that I needed her the most, and I think vice versa. I've helped her out a lot too. So it's been a very mutually beneficial relationship.
So what had you dive into the notion of a nonprofit? Are most jiu-jitsu gyms nonprofit?
Absolutely not. In fact, I was working full time for the Learning Club of KCK. And this is, 2019-ish, early 2019. They're providing an after-school tutoring service for these kids in Wyandotte County, these same impoverished kids. And some of the kids, they're getting a lot of benefit out of the one-to-one attention that this service is providing. But then there's a handful of students that, and I've noticed that all of the students were men, young men. They were not getting that attention that they needed. Whether they just wanted to do something more physical. They were kind of like wanting to goof around. And I remember being that age. I remember kind of goofing around a little bit too. So I kind of get it. I'm like, man, they need something a little bit more than tutoring. They don't want to work on homework right now. They should probably do something a little bit more physical. And that's where I started putting the pieces together on how, jiu-jitsu can be that mentorship for these young men.
Right. No, it's interesting that you say that. For anybody that doesn't know, I do a little bit of jiu-jitsu, have done more in the past, and it's interesting. A lot of the things that you're describing that I think are sometimes taken for granted. I personally took some for granted. I still remember a specific scenario where, I made the mistake of making an assumption on a person that walked in and onto the mats. And what's interesting with somebody that's rather mature in jiu-jitsu, what I noticed was they tend to give you things to see what you're going to do with them and how advanced you are, maybe kind of learning along the way. And so many times I thought the guy had no clue what he was doing, only to find out there was no way. There was no way. I'm sitting here like, oh, I hope I don't hurt him. And it was like, that wasn't even an option. It wasn't on the scale at all. It was one of those things where it's that moment when I don't even know how to describe it because it's like a real world scenario where almost like a video game, you go up to some chest that you think you're just going to open and all the money's right there and you're just going to take it only for it to evolve into a monster. And you're like, whoa, this is a dragon. It shouldn't be here. It's time to move. So, but it's interesting too, because it makes you think through a lot of things and unlock a lot of stuff. And I remember when I was younger, I did jiu-jitsu, and I grew up in a good Christian household. And there was a lot of concern about okay, well, it's he's going to be rolling with girls, and he's going to be rolling with guys, and only for me to hit the mats and realize the only thing going through either party's head is how do I achieve victory.
None of that matters. None of that matters. It's like, and if you even think about that for a second,
You're out.
you're choked.
You're out.
Like, there's no room for that on the mats, and if that is exposed on the mats, it is ostracized very quickly. That person is expelled and will no longer be welcome at really
Right.
any gym once it gets public. So.
Right. But where I was really kind of getting with that is it's interesting too, because it does create this fun environment where you're working with other people in a very close manner, toward a mutual goal of, victory without it getting hurt, obviously.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I'm surprised it doesn't seem like that happens that often at all. People getting hurt on the
Yeah, it
mats,
really doesn't.
considering what it is.
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's you hit the nail on the head. I thought that, and honestly, going back to kind of my roommate that was at K-State, me not wanting to train, that was one of the reasons, dude. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want anyone to hurt me, and I don't want to hurt them. But I think jiu-jitsu really teaches you what that means. I don't want to get hurt, and I don't want to hurt them. You don't know what that means until you've tried jiu-jitsu. The level of control that you have over another person once you put them in a submission or a rear naked choke, like I can choose the amount of pressure to put into there. Or we can just sit there and have a little, conversation. We can do a little duet. We can sing Boys to Men together. That'd be nice. But otherwise, I'll just sit there and hold you in a nice little rear naked choke.
So going back to the the younger boys that you were talking about that needed kind of a more creative outlet. What have you seen with regards to, and to give a little bit more background just from something I know, this is an exhaustive stretch where you're getting out as much energy as you can possibly get out to subdue the other person who's also getting out as much energy as they possibly can. How's the progression been there? So you were saying there were some things in the learning center that, they felt like, what was it like maybe them going back to the learning center after, they
Well,
just rolled the
so
day before?
that's a good question. Actually, so my initial, Sam, I'm so glad you asked that because I never got into this to be like a business owner or entrepreneur. I never wanted to start a nonprofit. In fact, my initial, reasoning for even joining the Learning Club of KCK was to try to offer jiu-jitsu under their umbrella, to offer it under their programming as an employee. That never came to fruition, and I did not see a path forward other than doing it on my own. So that's how One Community Jiu-Jitsu Club gets its roots. So to answer your question, I never really got a chance to see with those particular little boys, but I've have had other little boys since then, and little girls too, right? Other kids in general since then that have shown night and day behaviors, and as short as a week, some take, up to a month, but the behaviors definitely change very rapidly. Once, and some kids for different reasons. Right? You might have that kid that needs some confidence. So they see once they hit their first tripod sweep and see that they can do it, their self-esteem shoots up. You might need that kid that needs to get humbled a little bit. So we put that pressure on them. We put a little bit of that top pressure on them and let them feel that, dude, you're not the biggest person in the world. There's somebody out there that's going to humble you. And somewhere in between that is like there's the beauty, right? We'll bring down that ego, but we'll also bring up your confidence. What else does that?
Right. No, it almost seems like there's kind of something to that baked in. So like we think of like the Karate Kid or whatever, where it's or Napoleon Dynamite, where my mind goes to actually your sensei. But it really doesn't seem like there's anywhere near that much in jiu-jitsu, at least not in the gyms I've been to. Yet by contrast, mutual respect, I'd say almost just happens. On one hand, I want to say naturally, and on another hand, I want to say it's obligatory. There's not much of a choice.
You really don't, because the mats they'll humble you, bro. Like, I actually had I was walking out of class the other day. And a kid was like, "Why are you a purple belt?" I was like, "Well, I've only been training 9 years. I haven't gotten up to, that next level yet." I'm like, "Well, why can't you just go and buy a black belt and, just put that on?" All the adults on the mats were like, we just instantly laughed because of the sweet innocence of just youth, the naivety, right? Like, sure, I can put a black belt on. It ain't gonna help me on the mats, not even a little bit. And the words really aren't there, Sam. The words don't exist to explain what I'm talking about during that situation, right? Like a karate black belt, you can put that on. I mean, not to disrespect karate, sorry, all my karate guys, but you could put that on, but you can get a karate black belt in 6 months. There's never been a person in history that's gotten a jiu-jitsu black belt in less than like 3 years. And even that is expedited. It takes the it takes the average American 10 years to get a black belt in jiu-jitsu.
It's a long time.
It's that just deepness of understanding of the techniques, man. It's a deep understanding. And it's so weird because even as deep in my journey as I am, 9 years, I don't even feel like I'm close to black belt. I'm just now like feeling comfortable in my purple belt.
Why do you think jiu-jitsu in particular has kind of taken over the way it has? Like it seems to me, you watch MMA, and maybe it's because it's the only martial art I know. When you only know one, it's all you see. But for me, it really seems to be like that's a lot of it, and it's only becoming more popular, and we only see more gyms.
I was having this conversation the other day with another black belt in the city. I think it was Tyson Gilbey. And Tyson, we were talking about how jiu-jitsu really is the wild, wild west of all of the martial arts. Like, even if you look at a pure jiu-jitsu tournament, you're going to see stuff in a jiu-jitsu tournament that you will not see in a wrestling tournament. You're going to see stuff in a jiu-jitsu tournament that you will not see in a judo tournament. And like a Greco tournament, it's all upper body. We use upper body in jiu-jitsu. A freestyle wrestling tournament match, they're going to do double leg takedowns. We do that. Single legs, we do that in jiu-jitsu. We also do judo throws. But then what happens when we get to the ground? And that's where we'll, it looks more like catch wrestling, but we do things in catch re in jiu-jitsu that they don't do in catch wrestling, like our gis. We have gi chokes. I'll choke you with that shirt you're wearing there, Sam.
I
You know,
know. This would be
no
good for
other
that.
martial art does that. So that's why I think jiu-jitsu has become so popular. And has kind of taken over because it really is the wild, wild west of at least all of your grappling martial arts.
By the way, for anybody on audio, I'm wearing a blazer, and that would become very deadly very quickly on the mats. So. Which you've done, right? You've done
Oh
the
yeah.
dressed up blazer on the mats. Tell me
You
about
know, I
that.
love that's my favorite stuff. I love that. It's so fun.
So, tell me about diving into a nonprofit, man. How's some of that been? I mean, it's you think of so for I just kind of want to from my enlightenment. Just recently in business in general. I started a business, and one of the first things you need to know is what sort of designation in what, state and city, et cetera. And it's like, well, okay, it's pretty easy start. Is an LLC taxed as a sole proprietor? Done. But a 501c3 nonprofit, kind of your traditional designation, when people say nonprofit, normally that's what they're thinking of. Although there's a couple more that other people may not be aware of, I wasn't. And you've got to have a board of like five folks, which you think of a board, I think most of us are kind of thinking big enterprise. But no, if you're going to go out and start a 501c3, you've got to have five folks on your team, right? Is it minimum five, I want to
You
say,
got it. You
which
got
is
it. Yep.
already such a big number. I'm thinking
You got
just
it.
three would be a great. That's, I
Yeah.
mean, from three to five, I got to find two other folks.
Yes. No, it was, Sam, and I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of me during that time. Again, dude, I come from a background where I work for everything that I have. Which isn't a lot. Like, I don't have a whole lot. So I did not see a path in which I was going to be able to just start a traditional jiu-jitsu gym. I didn't have the knowledge at the time to go out and pursue a business loan or any of those steps. But I did, like I said, I was working at the Learning Club of KCK. So the founder of that organization, Mr. Brad Grabs, shout out Mr. Grabs. He was a great mentor and helping me understand the ways a nonprofit works. Honestly, helping me understand that a nonprofit is actually a business, right? Like they have an overhead, they have an expenses, they have, tiers or levels of income that they make. And I was like, oh, jiu-jitsu could be a nonprofit. I could do this, and let's just see if I can raise the funds. And so I did. I started a GoFundMe page on my Twitter account, and started appealing to, my followers. I think my GoFundMe probably raised like $1,200. But, during, the journey of, trying to raise money, I was talking to people on the ground too. So one lady I talked to, she was working at a organization that was trying to help alleviate trauma in Wyandotte County. So I was telling her my story about how jujitsu helped me overcome my trauma from foster care. Long story short, that led into her providing us with a $5,000 grant. And that's what I purchased the mats that you've sweated on. That's literally what I purchased those mats with. Those gray mats in our original space, which is at Blessed Sacrament Elementary School, or what used to be on 22nd and Parallel in KCK. It's a small 700 square foot, former elementary school classroom. Still has the chalkboards on it from, 1910 or whatever. And that's what we've turned into a jiu-jitsu gym with $5,000. I didn't have any money to pay any instructors or even myself. So I was like, dude, I'm gonna just do this for free. And that's how the nonprofit gets born.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So how's it been progressing kind of since?
Oh yeah, man, I've learned a lot. I've learned that I can't be so naive, right? I've learned that I need money to make this thing work.
None of us would start
So,
without the naivety, though, right?
oh yeah, exactly. And but I think a good point to this podcast is that's where a lot of people would, I mean, I think people would have quit a long time ago. But I think, people that might have run into the problems that I'm running into at this time, which it's funding, that's where you kind of throw in the towel and, you say, well, this is too hard. I'm not going to put in that work because, I mean, that's a whole nother beast. Then you really got to hit the ground and go and get in front of people's face, during the day and still do your mission during the evening. At least that's what my case was. It's a lot.
Can you walk me through kind of putting together the board? Because I don't know. And for me, I think part of it is as a sole business owner, the concept of putting together this concept of jumping in and then putting together a board from the get-go seems kind of daunting to me to some end. On one hand, I mean, I guess the naivety to some end, easily could be just five guys at a bar with me, but I think that's only going to pan out so well.
So this is where, for me, again, the beauty of what the jiu-jitsu community is, that's where it starts to shine, right? Like, I'm gonna break down my board to you. It's me, I'm the founding member. It's my wife, she's our secretary. Then we had Ricky Moritz, who is my long-term training partner and brown belt in jiu-jitsu. Braden Posey, who is the owner of, at least co-owner of Kitchen or Kitch Mills and Scissors and Scotch. Those are both, kind of elevating businesses here in the Overland Park area. And he's a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. Then I had Jason Bircher, who is, head of KCBJJ, black belt in jiu-jitsu, widely regarded as the grandfather of jiu-jitsu and responsible for bringing it here to Kansas City. We had Jeff Molina, another long-term training partner of mine, and UFC fighter, right? Like, guys, when I asked him to join our board, the number 15th ranked flyweight in the world. And then, I think I asked another business owner, one of my friends, Andrew. He owns Nail Perfection and Spa. So that's how we got our original board, was me kind of leaning into the network and really just begging these guys to help me bring this vision to life.
So what's some of the things you're working on right now? What's kind of
Oh,
the and what's the long-term play here? What's
yeah.
that long-term vision?
So the long-term vision is to, utilize Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu into the public school system so that we can tackle a lot of the behaviors that we're dealing with in our youth right now. I'm hearing tons of reports of fighting, tons of reports of, just insubordination, kids not listening, kids not wanting to put in the work ethic to, grow for their individual growth. And I think jiu-jitsu can solve a lot of that, man. I really do. I've personally seen, in myself and in other people, how jiu-jitsu can really open that ambition out of a person, how it can really help a person manage their emotions, how it can help a person with their level of social competency. Like, Sam, bruh, there's no way I would be having a conversation with you right now like this if I hadn't come from if I hadn't done jiu-jitsu. I wouldn't have had the vocabulary. I wouldn't have had the confidence. Like, there's just no way. I just wouldn't have been able to do it.
That's exciting. So how does that, so what was kind of, this is, it's not, I didn't, we skipped over it earlier, but I kind of want to show the progression. So what was there an original dream? Where was your dream first? I mean, and we kind of, it's weird because your life has been turned upside down and sideways. But what I like to kind of show is, in high school, we all kind of have this dream, maybe going off to be a doctor or an astronaut or police officer. And then, partway through, at least for me, it seems like, you're in college, you're supposed to know everything you're going to do from the get-go. What was kind of your original dream in your younger years? I mean, how did we get from there to here? I mean, you've showed a lot of the progression, but.
There was something you said earlier about like living multiple lifetimes.
Yes.
That is, you hit the nail on the head, dude. Like, I really do feel like that some days. I feel like, there was a portion of me that died at 12 years old. There's a portion of me that died when I aged out of foster care. And then there's a portion of me that died when I started jiu-jitsu. Like, those three different levels of trauma and then trying to over recovery. So to answer your question, what did I think I was going to become? I really don't know, dude. Like, when I was going through foster care, all I wanted to do was go home. That was my memory. Like, I wanted to go home. So I didn't have any plans for after that.
So how, what's kind of some parting words you might kind of leave as we kind of start to wrap up here? And then how can people connect with you and how can people plug into One Community?
Some parting words. My life, the only way that I've gotten to this point in my life is, I try to treat people the way I want to be treated. The golden rule, right? And I think that that goes a long way. So I'll say that, and then I'll say to my business, entrepreneurs or people who are wanting to chase that dream, no more 0 days, apply that concept. I think I found that concept on Reddit like 9 years ago. A guy said, he applied no more 0 days to his life. And what that means is if you got a goal, do something small towards that goal literally every single day. It can be as small as having a thought. It could be as small as having a conversation with someone. It could be as small as doing research on that goal. But no more 0 days towards your goal. And eventually, all those will add up. And that's the story of how we eventually got that initial $5,000 and Bro, that's what I've been doing ever since.
There's a fun, I the way I've heard it said is if you make a 1% improvement on yourself, which to your point, I think directly, like if you don't have a goal, that should definitely be the first 1%, the first step. If you don't have a dream, something you're headed towards. But on top of that, if you make 1% progression each day, you by the end of the year, you would be over three times improved on what it is that you're after. And they say it takes like what, 100 hours basically to become master of something. Obviously, a lot more in the case of jiu-jitsu, but for your average endeavor, to become a master at it, it's 100 hours. So,
Yep.
it's if that 1% is 1 hour, if even that,
Absolutely.
you've
Absolutely,
mastered
Brady.
three things.
Yes, sir.
So how do we get in touch with Ray? How do we plug into One Community?
Guys, definitely One Community Jiu-Jitsu Club is the name of our organization. You can Google that. OneCommunityBJJ.com. Most of my handles are some variation of Ray Freeman, BJJ. But I'm pretty easily accessible, guys. Reach out and let's talk.
And you're rolling with adults too, right? Because
Oh,
we've done a lot of talking about kids, but adults, we can have other,
no.
you just join your
Yeah, we
gym, jump
slap
in
hands,
and
bump fists, and let's get the choking on, man.
roll.
That's nothing.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. Okay. Well, I think with that, we'll end it here. And thank you so much for joining me, right?
All good, brother. That was fun.
All right. God bless y'all. Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.